We've turned this morning then to the story of the wise men and people in Jerusalem and Herod himself. We've been thinking about fearful people in the Christmas story. Lots of people we find out, and we've been looking at them, who were frightened. There was Zacharias. I looked at him a couple of weeks ago. And his disappointment as he struggled with not having a child. And then there was Mary. She was troubled when she saw an angel, but she was troubled by the angel's words too. And we thought the same. Maybe sometimes we can be troubled by words and what people say and what they might mean and so on. We're going to look a little bit this evening at the story of Joseph, who was told the same, that he didn't need to be afraid when he found out that Mary was with child. And then on Christmas Day, we were thinking of the shepherds. And on the one hand, we were saying actually the shepherds had reason, real reason to be afraid. They saw these angels of the Lord shining with the glory of the Lord. And we said there was a real sense in which we should be afraid of God, have a real fear of God. But of course, the angels had come to proclaim peace, that God was not coming in anger, but he was going to send his son as saviour. And then we're going to think this morning then about another group. We're told in verse 3 in Matthew chapter 2, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. The words are the same, afraid. He was afraid, and all Jerusalem was afraid with him. They were all afraid. And for many in the Christmas story, they then heard that message, do not be afraid. So we've been thinking about, and we're going to look a little bit this morning at the case of Herod and the people of Jerusalem and the visit of the Magi. Theirs was slightly different, wasn't it? They were afraid of people, of other people. And we've thought of various phobias that we might have. The word phobia just means fear. And sometimes we can have a fear of other people, of other people. Here's just a few strange names of various phobias people might have. Anyone want to guess what any of those, can you match the words to the picture? Or any of them up there? Yes, masklophobia is a fear of people wearing masks. It's a bit of their face obscured, and that perhaps makes us a bit frightened. The same is the case with beards. No, pogonophobia is a fear of people with beards. Maybe the same idea, that perhaps their face is a bit obscured. Gigantasophobia is a fear of tall people. Maybe those who are not as tall are a little intimidated. It kind of makes sense. Maybe they sort of see someone coming up behind them who's much bigger than them. It can make sense to have a sort of sudden thought of, oh, I'm a bit vulnerable here. Here's someone much bigger than me. The one in the middle, epiphanibophobia, is a fear of teenagers. One is alarmed suddenly to find a lot of teenagers. Oh, the bottom one's the fear of clowns, chlorophobia. We can be afraid, can't we, of people. And whether that's you're walking down the road on a dark night and you hear someone coming, and we can feel a bit afraid, whether we feel vulnerable, whether it's sometimes because of things that have happened in the past. And that makes us frightened now in various situations. Well, here in this passage, we see something of that message that came at Christmas. The people in this story today, as we've been thinking, were afraid. The Magi came and visited. They saw a star. They came to Jerusalem. They asked questions. Verse 2, where's the one who's been born king of the Jews? And Herod and the people of Jerusalem were afraid. Or maybe in a sense they were afraid initially of the Magi. We often in our Christmas cards just have three funny old odd men on camels. But the Magi probably weren't quite like that. And maybe there was a sense of which everyone was suddenly a little bit apprehensive about what was happening in Jerusalem as they arrived. The Magi were an ancient order of wise men all the way back to Babylonian times. We have them mentioned here in Matthew chapter 2. The other time they get a lot of mentions is in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, Daniel chapter 2, for instance, we read of King Nebuchadnezzar, and he had a funny dream, you might remember. And he called together his wise men, and the word's the same. He calls together the Magi. In Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and in verse 2, the king gave the command to call the Magi, the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans, to tell the king his dreams. And they came and stood before the king, and when they couldn't tell him the answer, later on the king gives a command, and the king was angry and very furious and gave the command to destroy all the Magi of Babylon. And that's who they are. And so there were this group of people way back in the times of these empires. This is 600 years before Matthew chapter 2. And they were interested in those kind of things. Dreams and stars and omens and prophecies and all kinds of things. They were interested in the mysterious and so on. Now, no doubt a lot of it was complete nonsense and was all just taken up with a bit like the kinds of realms of astrology and people reading tarot cards and those kind of things that people do today. Some of it might be complete nonsense. But they were called to advise the king. Nebuchadnezzar wanted their opinion on what these things meant. And so they had quite a lot of power. They were, in some ways, the ultimate influencers of the ancient world. They influenced everyone. The things they thought, the things they said, they advised the kings on what happens. They became administrators of great empires. They were the movers and shakers of these kingdoms. And Daniel and his friends became one of them. They became included among the Magi themselves. And Daniel becomes one of those chief advisors. And so he learns some of the things of their ways, perhaps. But maybe as well it goes the other way. And Daniel taught them things too. Maybe, this is only a guess, maybe Daniel introduced some of this huge group of people, the Magi, to the Old Testament. And so 600 years later, they're watching the stars looking for a king of the Jews. It doesn't really make sense for them to do that any other way, does it? Why were they interested in the king of the Jews? Miles away, maybe, even going back centuries to those things that Daniel perhaps had taught some of the wise men. Had it been passed on from generation to generation? Had they looked at those prophecies? Daniel himself wrote various prophecies about the coming of Jesus. Had he taught other people those? Were they kind of waiting for it to happen anyway? Trying to work out what Daniel might have meant by all his sevens and all the times in his strange book and so on. And they were waiting for the Messiah. Which seems an odd thing to do, since it had nothing to do with them, on one level. They came from a country far away in the east, yet they were watching and waiting for a Messiah to come. And maybe the only reference to a star having anything to do with the coming of the Messiah is in a very obscure prophecy in Numbers chapter 24, and in the very bizarre occasion of Balaam and his donkey, and so on. In Numbers chapter 24, Balaam gives this prophecy. I see him coming, but not yet. I behold him, but not near. A star will rise in Jacob. A scepter shall rise in Israel. A star will come, and a king will come. That's the only time it seems to be mentioned in the Old Testament. And they're hanging on to those kind of prophecies. So, the Magi see this star, and however they put two and two together, they are right, and they head looking for the king of the Jews. And they journey miles and miles, coming to crown and anoint a king. They bring frankincense and gold and myrrh to give to a king, to anoint a king. So it probably isn't three dusty old men on camels. This could be a large entourage, more like ambassadors from a far-off country, envoys who have come, full of pomp and ceremony, all kinds of things like that would come with them as this ancient order of advisors to emperors comes to find a king, the king of the Jews. And they arrive and ask questions. Where's the king of the Jews born? And they're all afraid. Herod's afraid. The people of Jerusalem are afraid by the coming of the Magi. Maybe especially because of the things they said. They ask about a king of the Jews. Now Herod called himself king of the Jews, but he wasn't even Jewish. He had claimed that title. He was an invader from the country next door, and he had invaded, and he had claimed the throne for himself. He called himself the king of, and he wasn't. And he hears now, where's the king of the Jews, the legitimate king of the Jews? Where's he been born, asked the Magi. And Herod is afraid. He's trembling in his boots as the Magi knock on the door, as this group of people arrive, maybe a large group of people, this entourage, these ambassadors have come to crown a king, and he knows it's not him. And Herod has claimed this crown, he's claimed the throne there in Jerusalem, and he was a murderous, paranoid control freak. There had been many others who had argued about his realm, his reign and so on. Many others who had questioned whether he really was the legitimate king. He killed them. That's what he did. Anyone who got in his way. He'd killed numerous members of his own family when he thought they were plotting against him. He'd killed several wives and several sons who he thought might try and oppose him or supplant his rule. And now he hears of another. Someone who's been born king of the Jews. And he's afraid. Herod, of course, isn't just afraid of these people. He's afraid deep down of the truth. Afraid of the truth. This ancient order come, looking for a king of the Jews. The kind of people emperors and kings had listened to for hundreds of years. And Herod does listen to them in one sense. And knows they're talking the truth. That there is a new king in town. That someone has been born. Herod takes that as absolute truth, doesn't he? He then asks everyone else, where is the Christ going to be born? They tell him. Herod knows this is absolutely true. He's not doubting the accuracy of what is happening. He knows it really is. They say he's born in Bethlehem. He finds out what time the stars appeared. He sends the wise men to go and find the child. Herod knows the truth, doesn't he? A star has appeared. Magi have come. Herod's the one who uses the word the Messiah or Christ. In verse 3, he's the one who puts two and two together. This isn't just a king who's come. These Magi, Herod puts two and two together, are talking about the Christ. Where is the Christ going to be born? Herod asks. Verse 4, where's the Messiah? It can be translated that too. Herod knows that's what it is. The Messiah has come. Everything is there pointing to that fact of truth. And Herod's afraid. Afraid of the truth. And so he sends the wise men. Go and search carefully for the young child. And when you found him, bring back word to me that I may come and worship him also. If only he'd been speaking the truth. That'd have been a very different end to this bit of the Christmas story, wouldn't it? Had Herod actually spoken those words in sincerity and said to the wise men, go and find the child, bring back words, and I will go and worship him. That was Herod's choice. He could really have done that, couldn't he? Yes, he'd claimed the throne. He'd ruled for quite a few years. And now he hears the legitimate king has come. The king of the Jews, the Christ, the Messiah. And Herod could say, right, I must go and worship. Herod could have done it. He could have really meant those words, he said, and gone to worship the one who really was the king. But Herod was afraid of the truth. And he wouldn't bow the knee. And so we know he's telling those things in deception. He wants to find out the child, where the child is, so he can kill the child. We know, of course, what happens next. But it didn't have to happen that way. That was Herod's decision, wasn't it? He could have bowed the knee. He should have bowed the knee to the one who was the king. He could have joined the wise men, the magi, and gone on the visit to Bethlehem, and the story would have been so different. But Herod was afraid. And perhaps if we just pause there for a moment, Herod, of course, is sometimes almost in our Christmas nativities, he almost becomes a pantomime character. He's the pantomime villain, isn't he? But he's a real person. He's a real person. And maybe we don't want to say it, but he's a person like us, like me and you, sometimes. And we can be afraid of the truth, too, in our own ways. And so, have you bowed the knee to Jesus? Herod had claimed the throne of Jerusalem. Well, what about your throne? The throne in your heart, the driving seat of your life. Who makes the decisions? Who's in charge of what you do in your life? Have you claimed that throne for yourself? Are you saying, it's me? I do it my way. I'm making decisions about my future and my choices. It's me. I'm the king. I'm the king of me. Have you claimed that throne for yourself? Or hear the news of the one who's been born king of the Jews and the king of you. And what's going to happen? Or perhaps are we more like Herod than we ever dare fear? That actually we want it for ourselves. Are you afraid of the truth? Have you heard the things of King Jesus? And you go and bow the knee like the wise men and say, he's the one who's king, not me. He's the one who should be in charge, not me. I'm going to listen to him. I'm going to follow him. I'm going to obey the King of Kings. Have you bowed the knee to King Jesus? Jesus is the one who is worthy, isn't he? And Herod takes that for himself in an effort to protect himself and his claim to the throne. And as Christmas comes to an end this year, and maybe as well as we think of a new year coming very shortly, where's that begin? Do you begin with that knowledge? No, Christ is in charge. He's the King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. He's my Lord and Saviour. He's the one in charge. He's the one in the driving seat, not me. Herod was afraid. He was afraid of the truth. He was afraid of this king. But what about us? How we responded, as we should, to King Jesus? Well, let's just pause there for a moment. Well, we thought of Herod, and we're going to spend the last few minutes then thinking of the people of Jerusalem. The people of Jerusalem were told when Herod heard this, he was afraid, and all Jerusalem with him. So the people of Jerusalem were afraid because Herod was afraid. Herod was afraid because the Magi had come. And there they were. The Magi, they risked everything. They went on this harebrained idea of journeying hundreds of miles far from the east to go in search of the King of the Jews. They unfortunately knocked on Herod's door and asked where was he who'd been born King of the Jews. Had Herod not been quite so frightened, he might have just executed them all on the spot. Just for asking such an impertinent question. And yet they risked everything. They headed on their way from Herod, seeing the star again. And we're told in verse 10, they rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. That's a lot of joy in one short verse in the Bible. They were filled with joy as they went as they searched, as they worshipped the king. They were filled with joy. On the other hand, the people of Jerusalem wouldn't go. They didn't go looking for the newborn king, and they were filled with fear. So as that first Christmas, there were those who were filled with joy and those who were filled with fear. So the Magi came, as we thought, they are looking for the newborn king. The priests and scribes, probably most of them, lived in Jerusalem. They were called to King Herod's palace, asking for information. Herod puts them on the spot, asking them memory verses they learned as children. Where's the Christ going to be born? And they've memorized their verses. The scribes and the priests, they answer. Verse 6, they know it off by heart. The verses from Micah the prophet. You, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. They know it. They practiced it. They've got points in the quizzes when they were children for learning these memory verses. They know it. Yes, it's in Bethlehem, where he's been born. And he's going to be the ruler, and he's going to be the shepherd, and he's going to be king of the people. They know the Bible verse. And the Messiah's been born. They now have heard it. A star has risen. The Magi have come looking. Everyone's putting two and two together. That only 5 miles down the road from Jerusalem, the king's been born. And the Magi, who've travelled hundreds of miles already, carry on the journey. But we don't read of anyone in Jerusalem taking an afternoon stroll to Bethlehem. They could have gone there and back in a day. The Magi definitely didn't. This was a mammoth journey. But we don't read anyone from Jerusalem. None of these priests, none of these scribes, none of the people who hear the news of the Magi coming. And it probably would have caused a great commotion, as we said, in Jerusalem. But it doesn't seem that anyone goes looking for the newborn king. They were afraid of others. They were afraid of Herod. And Herod, let's be honest, as we said, was a paranoid control freak. He lived in those years, it was not beyond suspicious, you know, that there were his sort of secret police, his sort of guards, keeping an eye over the general population. And maybe people were afraid. They heard of the Magi heading on their way to Bethlehem. And perhaps there were people thinking, oh yeah, maybe I should go. Maybe I should go to Bethlehem. But what if my neighbour sees me? What if my neighbour sees me going to Bethlehem and he reports it to one of Herod's guards? I might be for it. Maybe they were thinking those things through. Maybe they were, on one level, legitimate fears. But this was the Messiah they'd been waiting for. For hundreds of years, we sang in our first carol, sing through all Jerusalem, Christ is born in Bethlehem. The news was there to the people of Jerusalem that Christ was born down the road, 5 miles to Bethlehem. And maybe they'd longed for that time when the Messiah would come. And now they missed out. Because they were too afraid of Herod, too afraid of what any males might say about them. The people of Jerusalem missed out because they wouldn't take the risk. Later in his life, Jesus said this, do not fear those who can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Jesus warned his own disciples against persecution, that there might be times when there's a very costly decision to make. But Jesus said, do not fear those who can only kill the body, but cannot harm the soul. The people in Jerusalem missed out. Do you know what Jerusalem means? Jerusalem, Jerusalem, actually. It's the city of peace. The city of peace didn't have peace. They had fear. They were afraid. Because they wouldn't go and embrace the king, the prince of peace. They missed out on the peace and joy that the wise men had. They just stick with the fear. And of course, God could have kept them safe too. Those hypothetical people we thought of in Jerusalem who could have joined the Magi and gone to Bethlehem. Well, God miraculously kept the Magi safe. And Mary and Joseph and Jesus, he kept them all safe. He could have kept any others alive too who wanted. Instead, they choose to play it safe and side with Herod. They side with the king they've got rather than the King of Kings who's coming. They're too afraid. And of course, though, the safest thing to do is to entrust yourself to the King of Kings. What would they lose in saying, no, that's it, Herod's not our king anymore. Jesus is. He's the King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. The safest thing to do is to be under the shadow of his wings, isn't it? To come to him is the thing to do. And that's what Jesus himself said numerous times to the people of Jerusalem. And it starts here in the story, but it always seems to carry on. The people of Jerusalem, the city of peace, never seem to get the peace because they would never come to Jesus. So at the opposite end of Jesus' life, when he enters Jerusalem riding on a donkey on Palm Sunday, everyone's proclaiming another memory verse. Don't be afraid, your king comes, gentle and riding on a donkey. It's a verse from Zephaniah that time. And they all know it off by heart. Don't be afraid, the message goes out again to the city of peace that doesn't have it. Don't be afraid, the king comes, riding on a donkey. No. And still, they miss out. And as Jesus is on his way, a final time into Jerusalem. We looked at it recently in our series in Luke's Gospel. He weeps over Jerusalem and says, if only you'd known the things that would bring you peace. But it's hidden from your eyes because you did not know the day the king visits. The city of peace, it seems, from the beginning of Jesus' life right to the end, doesn't have peace. Because it won't come to Jesus. Too afraid of the truth, too afraid of others. And maybe just as we draw things to a close, maybe that's you too. Maybe you're missing out on that peace that comes from God because you're afraid of what other people do. Afraid of what other people might think. You think to yourself, yeah, maybe. Maybe deep down you're thinking, yeah, I should come to Jesus. I should trust in him. But what would my friends say? What would my friends say if they found out? And what would my family members say? Maybe they disagree. What would they think? What would somebody special, somebody close to me? Well, they might disown me. They might say, that's it. We can't be friends anymore. We can't be in a relationship anymore. Whatever it is. No. If you become a Christian, that's it. It's over. In that friendship or whatever it might be. And so sometimes we're afraid of other people. We're afraid of what they might do and how they might respond. And what about for us? Maybe, again, as Christmas comes to an end and a new year will soon begin, God willing, are we too afraid of other people? Or do we need to think to ourselves, no, this is come the time. As 2026 will begin, this is going to be the time I'm going to have to make a stand now for Jesus. In my school, in my workplace, in my college, in my university, in my home. I'm going to make a stand for Jesus. This is the right time. I don't want to miss out. I want to be following the king. He's got to be number one in my life. He's going to be my King of Kings, my Lord and Saviour. And that's it. I don't care what anyone else thinks. the safest thing to do is to... And of course, in our story, the wise men go on their way. They go on their way rejoicing. And Mary and Joseph are taken safe to Egypt. And Herod, yes, he does go on his murderous rampage. But he loses. Herod loses. That's the end of the story, isn't it? Jesus wins. The king survives. God keeps his son safe in Egypt and then brings him back at the right time and back then to Nazareth. God wins. The King of Kings, of course, wins. No one can possibly usurp him. Herod loses. He loses. And he'll face justice. Perhaps in some stories like this, we think, oh, Herod seems to get away with it. He murders these children. No justice for them. No comeuppance for Herod. He dies. He gets away with it, we might think. But no, he doesn't. Herod really would meet the King of Kings. He wouldn't bow the knee when he went to Bethlehem, but he would bow the knee all the same. Herod would face justice. He will face justice. He will be held to account for what he did. And Herod will bow to the King of Kings. Actually, we thought of Herod, and we thought of his problem was he was afraid. But you could put it the other way around. So the problem with Herod was he wasn't afraid enough. He wasn't afraid enough of God. And so that's why he does what he does. And as we were thinking, even on Christmas Day, we're thinking, actually, there's a real legitimate, an honest fear of the Lord that's the beginning of wisdom. To be afraid of the one who is God himself. The one who is Emmanuel, God with us. And we fear the King of Kings. And yet he offers peace if we come and trust in him and confess our sins. If we accept that forgiveness that he freely gives. And then, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of others. It's his verdict that matters. Maybe if that includes difficult times, maybe in the year ahead as we try and make a stand for Jesus in our workplaces and schools and all the rest of it, maybe it will be difficult. Maybe those will be costly decisions. But it's Jesus that matters. And he's the one who can help us in so many ways, like he does the Magi. They know in the end there's a murder after them. That King Herod wants to kill them. But the Magi are kept safe in God's hands. And they're filled with joy as they worship him. It's the safest place to be, in God's hands. There's nothing to lose as we entrust ourselves into his keeping, the one who is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. May we each come and bow the knee to Jesus this morning. Let's sing our last hymn, again, that picks up that reign of Jesus. Thou didst leave thy throne and thy kingly crown when thou camest to earth for me.